Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, February 17th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. About 120 people brave cold and snow for Not Our President rally and march in Pullman this afternoon. We'll hear from people who've lost federal jobs and federal support. And U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington grilled fossil fuel executive Chris Wright at Energy Secretary's confirmation hearings about Hanford. The Senate confirmed Wright as Energy Secretary a week ago today. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live from the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. About 120 people braved the snow and wind for a Not My President rally in downtown Pullman this afternoon. The group converged in Cougar Plaza and then marched around downtown and then to the Old City Hall. Supporters came out of business storefronts and honked their horns in support of the rally. Here are some of the speakers.
Thank you for coming out today in this wonderful, wonderful weather. In this wonderful, wonderful temperature, I see people of all ages and creeds and colors, and this is just such an amazing thing to witness happen. I've lived here for 4 years, and every single year I've seen something massive happen in my community. I've experienced something intense that just sort of changes me fundamentally as a person for the better, and I cannot describe how warm I feel right now. So, really, sincerely, thank you all for coming out. This was sort of a labor of love between a trifecta of groups. A bunch of us randomly got together on a Discord server, and we were just terrified and upset and wanting to take some sort of action. And then that sort of collided with some other groups, our Young Democratic Socialists of America on the WSU campus expressed concern. And then we also have a group that has been around for quite some time now, since the last administration, called Indivisible Palouse, who you can follow on Facebook. Hopefully eventually we can get away from Facebook. But Indivisible Palouse, a lot of you may have had the outreach from there. So this trifecta of locals in our community really came together and said, we need to do better for each other. We need to do better for ourselves. How can we push back against this corruption in favor of our community? So this is not so much an anti-regime movement as it is building ourselves up stronger so that if it does impact us negatively, we can stand together stronger and resist that. Those elements that make us all upset, make us all angry, and make life harder for everyone. So thank you. In just a few minutes, we're going to start our walk from our sickly Cougar Corner, Cougar Plaza Corner, up to the district courthouse, where if we'd like, we can have a couple more words if anyone would like to say anything. Please feel free to share your thoughts, your concerns, your hopes for the future for our community, who you'd like to see come together more, and who you'd like to be a part of, or who you want more people to be a part of. So we'll get moving in just a few minutes. Thank you for fighting the good fight and for standing up for each other. It's getting more and more beautiful every single year. Give yourselves a hand.
Yeah, hello everyone. My name is Matthew. I'm the chair of the local Palouse Democratic Socialists of America chapter. I think everyone here is rightly upset and worried about the actions of the new Trump administration. This administration is threatening the health and well-being of working class Americans with its attack on Medicaid and labor rights. It's threatening the civil rights of LGBT people through its measures against self-identification and trans health care. It's threatening to deport millions of working class people who live and work in this country because they have no opportunities from where they're from, largely due to the role of the United States in impoverishing and destabilizing their home countries. And finally, on a global level, it's threatening to ethnically cleanse Palestinians who have persisted through a year and a half of genocide in Gaza and ongoing attacks and displacement in the West Bank, to engage in expansionist wars with our neighboring countries, and to draw us into a devastating conflict with China as it dramatically escalates the already aggressive new Cold War policies of the Biden administration. It makes sense to feel threatened by this administration, and we have to fight back.
Our impulse to direct all our anger at Trump makes total sense. His rhetoric and his actions are scary and put us and our loved ones and our neighbors in danger every day. We also need to look beyond Trump and recognize that he is a symptom of a bigger problem, not the disease itself. First, let's be clear about what we're talking about. The root cause of so much of the harm we're seeing now is the system of capitalism. In our country, capitalism looks like CEOs and elites amassing billions of dollars in wealth, while many of us can't afford to feed our families or take care of ourselves or our kids when they're sick. The system of inequality we see and experience every day that keeps people poor and without safety, security, or dignity purely based on their race or where they were born was created by and is upheld today by elites. Even our Constitution was created by and for a few wealthy people trying to hold on to their power despite demands for equal representation and opportunity. We shouldn't fall into the trap of imagining that because Trump won more votes than Kamala Harris, the majority of the country approves of his attacks on the working class, trans people, immigrants, and the rest of the world. Trump won the election within an unrepresentative two-party political system in which we are given a false choice between two candidates selected by a few wealthy oligarchs to protect their interests at the expense of the well-being of the majority working class. What's more, this single undemocratically selected representative is given incredible control over the entire federal bureaucracy, the military, and the justice system. Lawyers close to the Trump administration are trying to expand this incredible power of the imperial presidency even more with a novel legal doctrine called unitary executive theory. This idea of unitary executive theory was bolstered by the Supreme Court's decision last year that the president cannot be held legally responsible for so-called official acts. This power is bolstered by an unelected Supreme Court, an unproportional Senate, and first-past-the-post single-member House districts, which hamper the emergence of a political alternative. In response, socialists call for a democratic constitution with universal and equal suffrage, which means the abolition of the Senate, ending the Supreme Court's right of judicial review, proportional representation, and doing away with the independent imperial presidency, which empowers tyrants like Trump. Our capacity for resisting these attacks in our livelihoods, our democratic rights, and our bodily autonomy is rooted in our capacity to build durable democratic organizations that are accountable to their members. Spontaneity can only get us so far. It's all well and good sometimes sometimes important to mobilize people to express their displeasure. But without organization and consistent political work, we have no leverage and will just go home after the march without having accomplished anything.
If we have any federal employees, especially if you were fired, I would encourage you to come up and explain your work and how it's important. I work at the USDA Germplasm Unit at WSU. I'm not a federal employee, but people around me are getting fired, and we're in the service of protecting food security and making sure our food supply is here to stay, especially against climate change and other factors. So again, if you're a federal employee, tell everybody about your work.
Hey everyone, I'm a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service senior biologist. I lost half of my team this week due to Elon Musk's Doge. They fired probationary employees. That was over half of my team. I actually directly work on SpaceX regulation. And it is something that I want everyone to be aware of. This is absolutely real and happening. They are corrupt billionaires that are making it so that we are having a much harder time regulating anything. Wildlife and people are being impacted by these projects. Please come talk to me. I will tell you very explicitly how many laws are being broken right now. So this is really great to see everyone out here. Please share. There's a website called Five Calls. You can contact your Congress people. I would highly recommend people do that and voice your opinions.
That was some of the sounds of the Not My President rally and march in downtown Pullman this afternoon. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox spoke to some of the participants.
My name's Dee.
Hi, Dee. What brings you out today?
I'm coming to protest Musk's takeover of our government.
What's important to you?
Freedom, censorship, not having censorship in our government. Yeah. Government staying out of our business and keeping all these programs alive.
Tell the listeners what your sign says.
It says democracy, not dynasty.
And what does that mean to you?
That America is a democracy, and we want to avoid the tendency for the executive to become a king, not a president.
And your sign?
Historians against monarchy. We already got rid of this a couple of hundred years ago. I want modern problems, not historical problems.
There you go. Okay. Is it okay if I ask you what your sign says?
Well, someone just handed it to me, but it says, "Welcome, refugees." It looks like it's a biblical passage from Matthew.
I see that, 25:36. Why are you here today?
In protest of Trump and Musk, that's why I'm here.
Right. Do you have anything that you're passionate about fighting against with that regime?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, okay. how he's treating the refugees is huge. Letting Musk control so much of the government is another. The way women are treated. I mean, you name it. You can pick any place,
What does your sign say?
So, no more cuts to NIH. National Institute of Health, and I'm here to support them because they saved my life in a clinical trial, and Dr. Rosenberg at the time had a cellular implant that they tried, and I went back to, for several years I went back to repeatedly went back to NIH for their support. And this has been 16 years ago.
Well, thank you for going for your sign and your and supporting this cause.
Well, we need to stand up for the people that stood up for us and support them, because it's not just the system. All those wonderful health care workers that provided the right kind of care for me. This is the least I can do to support them in return.
And those are some of the participants in the Not My President rally and march in downtown Pullman this afternoon, which attracted about 120 people. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox assisted with this story. An estimated 700 people showed up in the rain at the Idaho State Capitol in Boise today for a President's Day rally called No Kings on President's Day. The protest was part of the 50501 movement for 50 protests in 50 states, one movement, which is protesting the dismantling of the U.S. government today. According to the Idaho Press website, the protesters said the rally was to recognize the dividing line between the American and anti-American and the desire to uphold the tenets of the U.S. Constitution. Speaker Roddy White said he was a concerned veteran who wants state legislators to fight against the deconstruction of our Constitution. White said those oaths they took while entering their offices, oaths very similar to the one required for my military service, do not require obedience to the president as mine did. Rally attendee Joe Casson said he was concerned about fired Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, and Park Service workers. Casson said, "I'm here because I'm just watching all my friends that work for the federal government that are so dedicated and so committed to making better for all of us, and they're just getting fired without cause for no reason."
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.
KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and human rights.
Idaho students still have not caught up to pre-pandemic levels in education, according to a new report. The third annual Education Recovery Scorecard finds Idaho students are half a grade level behind 2019 marks in math and 60% behind in reading. One of the biggest issues in the state is chronic absenteeism. Tom Kane, lead author of the study and a professor at Harvard University, says the pandemic was the earthquake, but absenteeism is the tsunami that keeps rolling through schools.
Fewer than 5% of students in Idaho were chronically absent before the pandemic, but right after the pandemic in 2022, more than 20% of students were chronically absent, so missing more than 10% of the school year.
The scorecard says Idaho ranks 30th in math recovery and 38th in reading recovery between 2019 and 2024. However, the report also points to bright spots, such as in Lewiston, Kuna, and Idaho Falls, where students are approaching or exceeding full recovery. The report finds the gap between high-income and low-income districts nationally has widened, with the richest districts nearly four times more likely to recover in math and reading when compared to the poorest districts. Kane says the country is failing some students.
School closures were a public health measure that was taken on behalf of all of us. But at this point, the people who are paying the biggest price for those school closures are not adults, they're children, especially poor children.
Federal relief dollars expired last year. However, Kane says there still are ways states can help students. He urges teachers to tell parents when students fall behind. Kane also notes that states have Title I funds, grants to improve academic performance, especially in high-poverty schools.
States do have some flexibility in how they administer federal Title I dollars, and we encourage states to use that flexibility and continue funding academic catch-up efforts like tutoring and summer learning.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Idaho Legislature's House Ethics and House Policy Committee met behind closed doors today. They kept reporters and the public out of their meeting at the state capitol this afternoon, apparently in violation of House rules. The Idaho Capitol Sun reported Republican Representative Brent Crane of Nampa turned them and others away. The Idaho Capitol Sun reporter asked Crane to cite a law or legislative rule that allowed the committee to meet behind closed doors. Crane replied, "It's been a precedent to close the meetings," and claimed it's always been that way. The Idaho Capitol Sun reports House Rule 26 says all regular meetings of any standing, special, or select committee of the House of Representatives shall be open to the public at all times. Any person may attend any meeting of any standing or select or special committee, but may participate in said committee only with the approval of the committee itself. The legislature's website lists the House Ethics and House Policy Committee as a House Standing Committee. The agenda for the meeting listed one item, saying it was an organizational meeting. House Rule 45 says, within 12 days of convening the first regular session of each legislature, an Ethics and House Policy Committee shall be organized and its membership shall be determined. Today was the 43rd day of the Idaho legislative session.
Oregon lawmakers are considering a moratorium on permits for new or expanding factory farms in some of the state's most polluted areas. A coalition known as Stand Up to Factory Farms says, along with groundwater pollution, the ongoing expansion of factory farms in Oregon has resulted in dangerous air pollution, exploitation of workers, and a loss of family farms. The coalition's Amy Van Son says Oregon's groundwater management areas already have high levels of nitrate contamination from factory farms, and a moratorium would give the state time to address the problem.
This has just been an ongoing public health crisis for decades. Let's not make it any worse than it already is.
While livestock numbers remain stable, Van Son notes a decline in small and mid-sized dairies in Oregon, which has led to increased concentration of waste at bigger facilities. The Lower Umatilla Groundwater Management Area hosts one of the nation's largest mega dairies, Three Mile Canyon Farms, which holds up to 90,000 cattle. Along with protecting Oregon's drinking water, Van Son says the state needs to slow the spread of factory farms to protect the climate. Research shows animal agriculture generates nearly 15% of total global greenhouse gas emissions, which is greater than all transportation emissions combined.
Food and agriculture production, especially, is is often overlooked when we look at how to reduce our emissions.
Oregon has three groundwater management areas, Northern Malheur County, the Southern Willamette Valley, and the Umatilla Basin in North Central Oregon. Together, these areas measure nearly 1,000 square miles. The moratorium is a follow-up request to a bill passed in 2023 regulating factory farms in the state. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The U.S. Senate confirmed fossil fuel executive Chris Wright to serve as U.S. Energy Secretary in the Trump administration. Wright's new position will include overseeing the cleanup of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation in eastern Washington. Democratic U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington, a longtime proponent of Hanford cleanup, pushed Wright during confirmation hearings to get him on the record as a supporter of the tri-party agreement. The legally binding agreement sets clear environmental cleanup standards and deadlines that the Department of Energy must meet. According to the Tri-City Herald, Cantwell said it is important for Wright to continue to back the recently amended tri-party agreement for Hanford cleanup between the Department of Energy, Washington State, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. She cautioned Wright, as Energy Secretary, he might encounter Office of Management and Budget officials who think Hanford cleanup can be done on the cheap. Decades of plutonium production at Hanford left behind about 56 million gallons of toxic, liquid, radioactive, and hazardous waste stored in leaky underground tanks. The Department of Energy and Bechtel National plan to start solidifying some of the less radioactive waste into a glass form this coming August, a process called vitrification. Cantwell also asked Wright about investing in artificial intelligence and quantum technology research and development. In December, Cantwell and other bipartisan senators introduced the National Quantum Initiative to authorize $2.7 billion in federal funding to accelerate quantum research and development at federal science agencies over 5 years. Supporters of the bill say quantum computing has the potential to solve complex problems exponentially faster than existing computers. Cantwell said both artificial intelligence and quantum research need a leadership role from the national labs and adequate funding to continue the nation's national security agenda. Wright told Cantwell cybersecurity is a growing threat, with foreign actors attempting to infiltrate government and industry systems. He also told Cantwell electric grid resiliency is the most urgent energy issue we have today. In 2024, Pacific Northwest National Laboratory opened the $75 million grid storage launch pad on its Richland campus to advance storing energy in batteries at the electrical grid scale. Cantwell said the Tri-Cities is a hub for energy innovation, both because of the Hanford environmental cleanup, which led to the creation of the National Laboratory in Richland. She said it may be time to think more aggressively about preparing for fusion power generation, which would use heat from nuclear fusion reactions to generate electricity. Wright agreed that he would like the technology used for commercial power in the next decade. He said the nation's 17 national laboratories are magnificent pioneers in energy innovation. Senator Cantwell voted against fossil fuel executive Chris Wright's confirmation. Democratic U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington said during an hour-long speech earlier this month on the Senate floor opposing the nomination of Russell Vogt to head the White House Office of Management and Budget that the Hanford Department of Energy office is understaffed. The Department of Energy Hanford office has 303 workers overseeing 13,000 contractor and subcontractor workers involved in the environmental cleanup of the highly radioactive waste at Hanford, including plutonium. That work costs $3 billion per year. There is also a Department of Energy staff of 36 people in Richland who oversee the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory, a DOE research lab in Richland, with annual spending of almost $1.7 billion. Senator Murray's speech came as the Trump administration's employee Elon Musk works to eliminate half of the federal jobs. Murray said the administration continues to show outright hostility to our federal workers. She spoke of a Tri-Cities resident who started with the Department of Energy at Hanford last year, hoping for a stable job, and now who faces being fired for no reason. Murray said nuclear safety engineers, facility safety representatives, procurement and contracting personnel, attorneys, labor relations staff, and accountants all could lose their jobs. Speaking of the employee buyout program that was in effect when Murray made her speech earlier this month, she said she was deeply skeptical of any offer from a president like Donald Trump, who has so consistently shown he will try to stiff workers at every opportunity. Former Twitter employees have filed a class action suit against Elon Musk when he did not send them their promised severance pay when they were laid off. Something that Murray brought up as well. Murray said, "You deserve so much better than to have a billionaire with no understanding of what you do come in and belittle your work, suggest he can do better and push you out the door."
According to the Immigration Policy Tracking Project, the Trump administration has taken 130 actions on immigration so far this term. Groups in Montana are trying to both track those changes and watch state bills. One early executive order placed a 90-day freeze on refugee arrivals to the country, halting families with flights already booked to the U.S. Another made changes to temporary protected status and humanitarian parole, granted when a person's home country is deemed unsafe due to armed conflict, natural disaster, or other emergencies. Mary Poole is the executive director of the nonprofit resettlement agency Soft Landing Missoula.
This rapid removal of humanitarian protections, that's one thing that's really scary for folks. Many people came here through this new legal pathway that Biden created, and it might just be deemed null and void.
Two Montana immigration bills passed the House and were brought to the Senate last week. One would require police to check and report someone's immigration status during a lawful stop, and the other would allow the state to criminally prosecute a person in federal detention for immigration violations. Soft Landing Missoula works with 600 refugees and immigrants from 30 different countries. Poole says the organization has taken on new work with a change in federal administration, including immigrants' rights trainings.
Immigrants have rights, and so making sure that folks are aware of what those are and how our organizations and facilities can uphold those rights. That's a really important piece of the work that we've been doing.
According to the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, if immigration officials come to a person's home, that person doesn't need to answer a knock without a warrant signed by a judge that contains the person's correct name and address. People approached also have the right to remain silent. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Big Sky Connection.
Saturdays at 5:30 p.m.
But I like to shoot small game. Ducks, rabbits, squirrels, especially ducks.
Meet Ducks and Pipes.
Well, that's where you got the name, Ducks.
How did you receive the name Pipes?
My business, installing background music.
Ducks and Pipes are two characters in the 11-part ZBS radio play Saratoga Springs, a radio play where the sounds come alive.
I'm replacing everything with small animals.
Saratoga Springs in all its stereophonic glory.
You're going to have stuffed ducks.
Oh, yes, of course.
Ducks and Pipes live in a world where modern sound design is of the utmost importance.
Pipes, I want to create an environment for our banking clientele that reflects the feeling of the Adirondacks, the bubbling brooks, the wind in the pines, the dry leaves of autumn rustling in the birches,
the mist rising off the lake,
chirping birds,
honking of geese,
katydid,
call of the loon,
and music.
Yeah, with music.
Saratoga Springs, an 11-part radio adventure from ZBS, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Another amazing cultural offering from the station that builds community.
Wyoming is one of several western states where some lawmakers argue that states should have more control of the federally managed public lands within their borders, many of which contain oil, gas, and mineral reserves. Wyoming House Bill 118 would prohibit Wyomingites and the state from entering into any exchange or sale that leads to a net gain for federal agencies of either land or mineral rights. Gabby Yates with the Wyoming Outdoor Council says the bill runs counter to state policies, which mandate lands be managed for optimum sustainable revenue production and recognize recognize that land values are assessed by more than just acreage.
House Bill 118 would hinder future access opportunities by limiting common sense land deals while hurting the rights of landowners to sell their land to whoever they choose.
This comes after the U.S. Supreme Court last month declined to hear a Utah lawsuit arguing that control of public land by the Bureau of Land Management within its borders is unconstitutional. Wyoming, Alaska, and Idaho issued an amicus brief in support of Utah's case. House Bill 118 passed the House and could be in a Senate committee as early as this week. Senate Joint Resolution 2, which failed a third reading in the Senate by just two votes, would have demanded that Congress transfer all public land and subsurface resources in Wyoming to the state. Yates says it failed after an overwhelming number of Wyomingites spoke out against it.
Several senators spoke to the fact that this issue was what their constituents were most passionate about this session. People in Wyoming really value their public lands.
She points out that sales of Wyoming trust lands benefit schools and students, like the $100 million sale of the 640-acre Kelly parcel added to Grand Teton National Park in December. I'm Kathleen Shannon with Wyoming News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather. Winter storm warning remains in effect until 4 a.m. Tuesday for the Idaho Palouse. An additional 2 inches of snow likely tonight. Heavy snow. Plan on slippery road conditions. If you must travel, use an extra flashlight. Keep an extra flashlight, food, and water in your vehicle in case of emergency. Moscow Pullman forecast. 70% chance of snow tonight, mainly before 10 p.m. Cloudy, low 29. New snow accumulation around an inch. Tomorrow, 40% chance of snow, mainly before 10 a.m. Cloudy, high 35, half an inch possible. Tuesday night, 30% chance of snow after 4 a.m. Little or no snow accumulation expected, mostly cloudy, low 26. And on Wednesday, 90% chance of snow, accumulation half an inch. Rain and snow after 4 p.m., high 35. Current temperature is 28. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Brenda Cox assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints is up next, followed by Spotlight with Bex playing music for you. Chia Pets playing music starting at 9, and more to come. KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.